Bickley and Murata, Social Studies.
Holy moly, 1 o'clock already. Time for Social Studies. Time for Sarah Cazell to class this joint up a little bit.
How are we doing today, guys?
Hello.
Good luck, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly.
How are you doing,
Got
Sarah?
Got my work cut out for me. I'm doing just fine, Jarrett. How are you?
I'm sorry I sandbagged you on the Mock My World topic earlier.
Good.
Really? You bring that up again?
Well, I...
No, I'm glad that he
I've
did.
Noticed a tone in her voice when she was talking to me since then, and I wanted to settle
That's
things.
That's not true, but thank you anyway. I have to say, I was listening on my drive-in to the first few minutes of your show, and when you guys were saying, it's Thursday, but it feels like it's 4 days past Friday, that kind of situation,
yeah.
I was
right there with us,
there with you guys. Yes, yep. I don't know why, but
I know why.
Like
why?
The longest week.
It's because it's a full week after a short week. Last week was a 4 day week.
Was
but
that
you know what?
Last week?
Last week was a 4 day week that seemed like a 9 day week.
Yeah. That couldn't have been just last week, was it?
Yeah.
What
see,
is
we're all
time?
Messed up.
Yeah.
We are all messed up.
Okay.
Wait, where am I? Who are you people? What are you doing in my living room?
30 seconds of our living days that we will never get back.
True.
Tick tock.
Okay,
let's get into the questions for today's social studies. If you do not already follow along on Twitter at Bickley_Murata, there you go. That's where all the questions go every single day. And that is also where I pull the replies from that I read during the segment. So play along, won't you? Okay. A lot of people saw last night's Suns Hornets game as a gimme for Phoenix, and they ended up losing 124-121. So we are starting off by asking, open-ended, what frustrated you the most about the loss last night?
The blowing of a 17-point lead. Free throw shooting always frustrates me. This is a team that's a great free throw shooting team, and that was, you can make a real compelling case that was the direct reason they lost the game last night. Those things. And it's just the inconsistency over the course of 48 minutes was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, the foot off the gas pedal. I know it's a bad cliche, but it seemed to really pop last night. Mm-hmm. Just the lack of intensity in the third quarter, giving up that lead, falling behind. Yeah, just yuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kyle Anderson, he agrees. He says not stepping on the Hornets' throats when the Suns were up by 17 was most frustrating to him. Cindy Snyder says Monty doesn't adjust quickly enough. That was most frustrating for her. Griff Dale says definitely the fact that the Suns did not play good defense for the majority of the game.
That is true.
And then the final response I'll read from Randy Knights. He says most frustrated that the team lost last night. Easy game. That's what they thought going into it and ended up losing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, a few people that when the threes stopped falling, they didn't adjust and try to get it inside or anything. They just kept.
Yeah, because they started out like nuclear hot from 3-point range, and it was an interesting juxtaposition too. Because if you look at the stats, their 3-point statistics were almost identical to Charlotte's, but it was all front loaded, where Charlotte's was all back loaded. But they ended up in the same spot, and Charlotte's three-pointers turned out to be way, way more impactful on the outcome of the game.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to our next question.
Oh, can I add one more from Anthony?
Do.
He
Absolutely.
Said he was most frustrated by hearing Chris Brown on the PA system during a video replay review.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Vince, did you do that? You're not in control of the music, are you?
Nothing to do with that.
Is the music in arena any different now that there's fans there? Is there more of it or anything?
Well, it was different to start.
There's new DJs this year, so the music is very different. But they were ramping up and getting used to things without fans. So music was a big part of the atmosphere when there was no fans in the building.
Did I hear a funky cover version of Immigrant Song coming from that last night? No?
I don't know.
Oh, that's true.
I'm tuned in.
He's locked in.
Yeah.
Locked in.
Plus, if I was in charge of the music, it would just be like, wow, another
Depeche Mode song.
Another Depeche Mode song.
Nothing gets me fired up for a game more than The Cure.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Love that jam. Okay. Moving on to an NFL question.
Depeche Mode and Garfunkel.
Depeche Garfunkel. Yeah, that's good. A few hours ago, about 10 o'clock this morning, Buda Baker tweeted, uh-oh, they better hope they don't do it. They better hope they don't do it. What do we think Buda Baker is referring to? with this tweet.
I have a lot of weaknesses, things I am not good at. What I'm really terrible at is trying to interpret the very cryptic tweets of professional athletes and entertainers. Yeah. So I'm not even going to take a stab at this one.
I'm gonna stab based on timing that it's Russell Wilson related.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm at.
That makes sense, and that is what just about everybody guessed in the responses. At least everyone who had a serious response. Bunch of people said, got to be Russell Wilson. Douglas Rhodes, Taco Bell has taken away nacho fries again. So perhaps that's really getting on Buda Baker's nerves today. Mike Bender says, someone's about to get a car wash with a 1% chance of rain today. That's a good one. Tommy Mosquita, okay. Uh-oh, they better hope they don't do it. Tommy Mosquita says, Twitter is considering giving Jarrett a checkmark.
Oh, I think the Russell Wilson possibilities are more than that.
Fair enough. Okay, sticking with the NFL. Just this past segment, you guys were talking about the NFL draft class and some of the bigger prospects, specifically on the offensive side. That's what we're about to look at. Which offensive weapon in this year's draft class do you think will have the best NFL career? Here are the four options. LSU receiver Ja'Marr Chase. Alabama receiver Devontae Smith, Alabama running back Najee Harris, or Florida tight end Kyle Pitts?
Ooh,
best NFL career?
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
I love all four of those players.
Yeah.
Do you notice anything about those four players, Beck? Anything they have in common?
The SEC, maybe?
Yeah.
I will take... You want to vote first?
I love Najee Harris,
so do
but
I
would, and I'm a huge Devontae Smith fan. I was even before this year, but I would vote for Kyle Pitts out of those four.
I would say it's going to be Najee Harris or Kyle Pitts is going to be the answer to this question.
Okay. Right now, 38% of our voters believe Devontae Smith will have the best NFL career. That's not surprising. It's probably the most recognizable name right now. 29% think it will be Kyle Pitts out of Florida. Best NFL career. 22% went with Ja'Marr Chase. Only 12% said Najee Harris.
Wow.
I know.
Disrespecting the running back position.
Draft him now.
Did you see Najee Harris and his hurdle in the Notre Dame game?
It's unbelievable.
That was, dare I say, redonkulous.
Yeah. It's a good word for it.
That is a good word for it. Okay, moving on to our final question today. At the very top of the show, like I mentioned earlier, before, or maybe it was after you got into the time and how it all passes the same, even though we feel that it passes differently. You were talking about art and music and their high monetary value assigned to those two things based on the emotional impact it can have on humans. Just your very typical like sports talk stuff.
Yeah.
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 So
I venture a guess that we were the only show in the country that was talking about this.
Us and Jim Rome.
That's probably true.
What is up? How do you feel about art? Have a painting. Make
Claude
it not
Monet,
suck.
Great jungle guy.
Let's go out to Picasso in H-Town. What is up? Pablo, great to have you.
I think that really is your best impersonation.
Really,
that is incredible.
That's really good.
Gosh, that is so good. Okay, we're asking. Of the following four options, which form of expression or art makes you feel most connected or affects you the most emotionally? Music. Movies/TV.
This is great because I'm going to vote music. He's going to vote TV, movies. Mm-hmm. He's going to vote food.
No, you're wrong. I'm not that predictable.
No? Okay. So the four options.
You're
are
probably music too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Movies and TV, art.
Yes.
Or food.
I love movies and television, but I've never really been moved by much that I've seen. Okay. I guess a couple movies would qualify. Music is the easy answer for me.
Yeah.
When you can interpret lyrics the way you want to interpret them and apply them to your life. I just think it's funny that that Jarrett wrote this question and food is the fourth choice. Is that your choice, Jarrett?
All these things in different ways affect me. The art thing, if I view clothes as a form of art, in the then I also relate heavily to that. Food definitely for sure.
Clothing and art are two different
clothing
things.
Clothing is fashion.
True, but it's a form. It's
fashion,
Jared,
is a way of expressing yourself.
How is it different?
You're not an artist, Jared.
But no. I'm not the artist. I'm saying that the clothes are the works of art.
Are you saying is the...
It's similar to a paint. It's like wearing a painting.
You're just a vessel for the art. Exactly. You're just a conduit for the art.
I'm a canvas.
Saying.
I'm a blank canvas.
You're darn right you're a blank canvas.
Wait a minute.
With emphasis on blank.
Yeah, a lot of blank.
I do have to say this. When we were doing our mock my world topic of most disrespected.
I know where you're going with this.
Jarrett got a lot of love as being disrespected.
Yeah, you know, it and... Yeah, okay. To all the people who feel empathy for Jarrett, you don't have to work with them.
Jarrett has more leeway to chime in on an open mic, maybe than any sports radio producer in the country.
Yeah. Yes.
How's
he
that?
He records songs without our permission. Songs.
He writes poetry.
Right.
That nobody asked for.
Jarrett's song parodies did get a mention, by the way, for art that speaks to them the most.
Yeah.
Jake Siebert says Jarrett's song parodies.
But what do they say? It's not just that it speaks, it's what they speak.
Right.
Yeah, touche.
Right.
Touche. 70% of our voters went with music. 18% said movies or television. 10% for food. Only 3% for art.
Yeah, the art thing it's never really struck me in any way. Maybe I'm a simpleton.
You might be.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Would you say that I'm small-minded, Sarah?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say that.
Is there a trend among our on-air hosts at this radio station?
What is it about that studio? Small-minded people.
Thank you, Sarah.
Great job,
Social
guys.
Studies every day at 1 o'clock with Sarah Cazell. Coming up next, it just won't go away. The DeAndre Ayton moments that make you want to pull your hair out. We'll get into them next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
A lot of tentacles off the Suns' loss last night to the Charlotte Hornets. It was a frustrating loss for a number of reasons. We've outlined a lot of them. Mm-hmm. The officiating, certainly a part of it for some. A lot of people wanting the foul call on Gordon Hayward on the Devin Booker last-second attempt at the game-tying three. Didn't happen. Still haven't seen the last two-minute report if it's come out yet. I keep checking, but I don't think we're there yet. Blowing a 17-point lead, allowing a team to get hot. The defensive functionality was just not there last night. Again, credit to Charlotte for playing really well. But another part of the frustration, and this goes to something that you brought up earlier in the show. We've talked about it before. We will talk about it again. Mm-hmm. And that is the play of DeAndre Ayton last night for the Suns. And if you look at the statistics without watching the game, you'll look at 5 of 8 from the field. Pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
You'll look at 8 free throw attempts, which might be a season high for DeAndre.
Yeah, and go, wow, I haven't seen that very often.
Hit
yep.
6 of them, 16 mm-hmm. points, 10 rebounds. Almost the identical numbers you used in your example.
Yeah.
You'll take 16 and
12,
and 12 yeah. if it's an impactful 16 and 12.
Gladly.
And it wasn't all bad for DeAndre Ayton, but man, there are still some tendencies that he has in year 3 that have got to be, if not already there, bordering on concerning.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And I think a lot of people are looking at his timeline and just wondering, man, where would he have to go to make you okay as an owner of the Suns? Say you own the Phoenix Suns. How much better would he have to get for you to feel okay about giving him $30 million a year? That's a real, real heavy, heavy question that James Jones is going to have to wrestle to the ground. Like I said, DeAndre Ayton wasn't bad last night, but to me, the problem was the tendencies of which we're speaking. Some of the defensive blow-bys and the defensive indifference he shows and the bad hands showed up at the worst possible time, and it kind of sucked the life out of the team, and it gave a reprieve to Charlotte to kind of take that game and get it to the finish line. And I think there was a lot of frustration. I know he's a work in progress. We've been told that for the longest time. I think we've all kind of reconciled that, yes, there's an additional pressure to being the number one overall pick that in a perfect world would not even be part of our conversation, but it is. And I think this is a tough thing to look at because I do know that Chris Paul and Devin Booker have been on him nonstop, but I think last night at the end of that game, after that sequence of plays I talked about, there just didn't seem to be anything left in Chris Paul or Devin Booker to say to DeAndre Ayton. And maybe it was just a look, maybe it was a moment, maybe I'm interpreting it wrong, but this is a lot of additional work for the key players in this basketball team to grow a guy on the job. I don't want to get into the situation now where this basketball team goes, okay, now you know, final 5 minutes, can't pass the ball to DeAndre. Because that's not...
My thought from my vantage point on that play when it happened was that was... I thought it was kind of a curious time to try to make that play to a guy that hasn't been that engaged offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel that way a bit. I went back and watched the replay of it, and that's a catchable pass. That's a catch that an NBA big man has to make.
And the manner in which he butchered it was alarming. It didn't just go through his hands.
Because it looked like there was no preparedness for it.
None. And very little effort, and it just looked like he was, you know, you ever do those little spikes in volleyball where you use your fist just to pop the ball up in the air over the net? That's what it looked like he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. Devin Booker's reaction was kind of like, all right, I shouldn't have done that.
But, I mean, to the aggressiveness thing, I counted at least three, if not four, times under the hoop where Ayton, and he got to the free throw line on most of these, but it looked like with the contact and the foul that he should have the strength and the presence or the aggressiveness to get the N1, to turn possibly into three-point plays, and that didn't happen. And then what has exacerbated it for me recently is in the Portland game, the Suns were up so big. Damian Jones got off the bench, and his shining moment as a Sun in garbage time of that game, he was trailing the play. He got the ball at the top of the key. He saw the defense part and put the ball on the floor and exploded to the rim for a highlight dunk.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, Cody Zeller, who's carved out an okay career for himself, certainly not a top-flight NBA center, but a guy you can trust as a veteran, got an opportunity and nearly ripped the rim off the backboard when he got free underneath. And, you know, the constant barrage, and I'm not giving up on DeAndre Ayton. I won't ever. I'm rooting for him. But, man, the constant barrage of finger rolls and even the dunks, sometimes it's just, you know, hands above rim. Drop the ball down, and the net barely ripples.
Right. And I get so disproportionately frustrated with that when it seems nonsensical, but I just find myself screaming at the television, dunk the ball.
Yeah.
Don't just lay it off the glass. Just don't lay it in the dunk the ball. Do something. Duh! I see these commercials for DeAndre Ayton for the Phoenix Suns hype commercials, and he's duh! Play like that. I'm getting upset now talking about it.
The defensive side of things last night, and people will talk about the blow-by dunk by LaMelo Ball. We just watched that replay during one of the commercial breaks, too. And people were bringing this up on Twitter, and I think there's a lot of validity to it. DeAndre Ayton has been playing up, and it came to fruition in the Brooklyn game, too, playing up on guards. When he's isolated on guards, and they like that matchup because of his length and his athletic ability to stay with them, but playing too far up, not playing for the shot, but allowing with lack of help. And the help on that play last night when Ball dunked was non-existent.
Yeah.
And I know DeAndre Ayton's going to get the brunt of that. Recent play overall, to your point on statistics and output, over the last 11 games, which the Suns are 9-2 in that stretch, 13.7 points, 10.2 rebounds, 40% on threes, not a whole lot of attempts, 64% from the floor, 76 from the free throw line. On their own, those are not horrible numbers,
no.
Especially for a team that's become more reliant on three-pointers and more reliant on guard play recently mm-hmm. to their success.
Yeah.
But you know, the optics of it, when you pour into the surface underneath the numbers, man, it's yeah. still there.
Especially because it was following a stretch of like 4 or 5 games.
Yes.
Where he actually looked like he was turning it up and turning it on.
Yeah, and there was people, the switch has been flipped.
Yeah. I just don't know why he doesn't want to dunk. It's an expression in the NBA. It's a sign of dominance. I don't know why he does not want to do it. Does he not like to jump? Does he not like to play basketball in midair? Is he really, really afraid of contact? I don't know what it is, Vinny, but it gets me upset to the point of it being just, okay, look, he made a layup. Get over it. But to me, I just see the fuel that he won't give this team, and I just don't know why it happens.
Yep.
And the catching the ball, it's just the darndest issue. I don't remember him having this issue.
That's what's so frustrating about it is we've seen guys over the years who just have bad hands.
Yeah.
And it's always there, and you're surprised when they catch the ball.
Right.
He's not one of those guys, but it pops up too frequently.
I don't know. So, I mean, it's, I don't know what you do about this. I'm going to be very curious to see, you know, the maneuvering that they did to free open a spot if they choose to fortify that front line. I wonder if they've got something in mind. I really do.
Maybe it was just to avoid the guarantee, and that's why they got rid of Damian Jones. Could be nothing more than that.
Yeah, it could be.
Coming up next, we'll get deeper into the juicy story coming out of Seattle about Russell Wilson and his feelings toward the Seahawks. Michael Sean Dugar, who covers the Seahawks for The Athletic, he'll join us next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Yeah, we were expecting a lot of activity on the quarterback front anyway before Russell Wilson's name got thrown into it this offseason. But there's a story bubbling up in Seattle. Our next guest, along with Mike Sando and Jason Jenks, wrote a piece for The Athletic, What is Driving the Rift Between Russell Wilson and the Seahawks? And here to talk about it with us, Michael Sean Dugar joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Michael, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Do we have anything to talk about? I'm not sure.
Yeah, everything's so quiet and buttoned up here in Arizona. I mean, you're in the eye of the storm there in Seattle. Was any of this evident during this? I read the piece and the way you tell the story about how things transpired or fell apart, especially leading into that Cardinals game and Russell Wilson storming out of the room. But was any of this really evident from the outside during the regular season?
I think it was. It was one of those situations where you had to really read between the lines and really look for the breadcrumbs. You know, like someone in Russ's camp pointed out to me something that I had known, but it's an example of a breadcrumb that you wouldn't think of unless you're really tuned in to the dysfunction. They said, go back and find any time that when they were letting Russ cook, whenever Pete said that was Seahawk football, when did he ever refer to it as that? He never did. Right. I mean, I didn't have to go back and watch every press conference. I know he didn't. But now what happens when they're running the ball and playing defense and that's how they're winning games? Pete refers to it as Seahawk football, right? Like whether Pete wants to admit that or not, that is his, like, that's his way of like not being all in on let Russ cook. And if you're the guy whose name is in the middle of the slogan, you interpret that as you're not all in on me. And that's not something that you just watch a Seahawk game on Sunday and you put that together, right? You'd have to be like some evil genius to figure all that out. But when it was brought up to me, I was like, well, you know, that does make sense. And it's one of those things where you really had to be plugged in. Otherwise, you're just watching and thinking, oh, Russ is really good. His O-line stinks. You know, the sky is blue. Grass is green. Like, that's just kind of how the world goes.
Right.
You know, death taxes and Russ with a battle line. But, like, when you really dig into the comments of Pete, comments of Russ, look at some of the transactions that the team has made, you know, look at how angry Russ looked at the Super Bowl, and everything comes together. And it's like, oh, no, no, no. This was all out in the open already. we just added a few little details, and now, like, the world's on fire.
Yeah, right. Well said. Yeah, it, to me, that scene in the Super Bowl, it was almost comical in real time. It was like, why is Russ so angry? He's got a suite for the Super Bowl, for goodness sake.
Just won it, man of the year.
Right, exactly. and then to hear it laid out about what he doesn't have in relation to what Tom Brady was given to win his Super Bowl, it was interesting. So when you handicap this, where do you think this thing is going? What does Russ truly want, just from your intuition?
I mean, not even from my intuition, man. He wants to win. Right? Like, Russ had a son in July. It's his first biological son. He named the kid Win. And, like, Russ let us know what he wants more than anything in the world is to win. And I think the Super Bowl was the trigger, not only because he wasn't playing in it, because of who was. I think that's something that, again, until it was brought up to me by someone at Russ' camp, I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. You know, who did Russ lose to the last time he was in the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. Tom Brady. Right? And who was he sitting there watching however many years later in the game he wants to play in? It's Tom Brady. Right? If Tom Brady can get back there, why not me? Right? So I think the only result that fixes this is getting back there. You got to get back there. And, I mean, if you're in one of those situations, it reminds me of, I'm sure everyone saw The Last Dance. I think they opened that documentary about MJ. Before the 1998 season, it was basically like, we got to win the championship this year or this all goes to hell. That's kind of what it feels like. You know, this is the Seattle version of The Last Dance. If they don't get back to the championship, I don't know how many people are still on the Seahawks payroll, you know, this time in 2022.
Michael Sean Dugar, who writes for The Athletic, he is our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. He also hosts the Seahawks Man to Man podcast. A lot of this came to light when the week of the Super Bowl, Russell Wilson did kind of the media tour and openly talked about being sick of getting hit and the 400 sacks, and he's on pace to become the most sacked quarterback ever to play the game. And there's different schools of thought, and I think you hit on one of them, and that is, offensive line-wise, the Seahawks don't have a solid history with Russell Wilson as their quarterback. But when you break it down, how much of that is Russell Wilson culpable for, his style of play leading to sacks and the physical punishment he takes?
When there was the first report, I think it was when Russ went on like Colin Cowherd's show, I sent out a tweet with three notes. I was like, everyone keep these things in mind. A, sacks are a quarterback stat. B, the Seahawks are very bad at finding O-linemen. C, it's going to be a very long offseason. All of those things are true, right? And they're going to continue to be true, especially point number three, as everyone's learning who covers the Seahawks. Like, Russ does play a style of football that lends itself to a lot of hits and a lot of sacks. Also, the Seahawks keep giving him bad O-linemen. Like, that's really why I think there's such a stalemate, because they're both right. Like, if you're Russ and it's like, hey, man, you keep giving me former power forwards as my left tackle, and then the Seahawks are like, well, you keep doing triple axles in the backfield, so you're taking all these sacks, and they're just staring at each other, right? Like, then you can just get nowhere. And Russ is like, well, why don't you let me help find me some good O-linemen? And, you know, they're like, well, trust the process. I was like, well, the process keeps getting me hit by Aaron Donald, you know, a bunch of times every year, and then they just stare at each other. Like, right. Both sides have great, you know, perspectives, I think, and that's something we tried to convey in the article, is that we don't care who's right. It's just that one side has a view, the other side has a view, and they can both make points. And if they cannot just let bygones be bygones or agree to disagree and, you know, get along, play nice, then, yeah, this is just ultimately going to end in a divorce.
This is fabulous analysis, and I'll tell you, I had no idea Russell Wilson named his son Wynn. That is just a classic detail. What do you make of the Adam Schefter tweet that IDs four different teams as places he'd agree to go to?
Yeah, that was – we actually, to pull back the curtain a little bit, we kind of were struggling with how to word the trade request part and the teams being listed, because Schefter's right. He hasn't requested a trade, like, or demanded one, you know, the words we're used to hearing in sports. It's more like, hey, you know, we ain't requested one, but, I mean, now that we're on the subject, here's four teams where, you know, we go. And it's like, I almost responded to Schefter's report saying, we're like, guys, this is a trade request.
Right.
You know, like, that's what a trade request would look like. It goes back to something, I think we use this line in the story, another full transparency. I haven't read it this morning. I've just been a little too busy. But there's a line in there from Brandon Marshall over at Fox. He says, I think Russell's trying to figure out a classy way to move on. And that line stuck out to me because, yeah, it's not the traditional, hey, let me stomp my, you know, feet and, you know, do the James Harden so they trade me. it's more of a calculated effort to make it look like, all right, if I am out of here, it's because they didn't want me. You know, whereas a trade request is, I don't want you. It's mm-hmm. semantics for the most part, but like, as you can see, like, we're dealing with two very calculated groups here.
Yeah. New offensive coordinator there in Shane Waldron coming over from the Rams. Does that make a difference in appeasing Russell Wilson in your mind, or does it still fall under that whole umbrella of Seahawks football and Pete Carroll rules so they do what he says?
Yeah, it's always going to be what Pete says, and I think that's another issue that Russell has. You know, that's why we included the part about Pete's son just quitting his job a couple times, you know, in the middle of the season. He's supposed to be coaching the receivers. You know, like, if Russ has all these complaints, and, you know, who can he go to? Mm-hmm. You know, I asked Pete Carroll during at the end of the year, I said, hey, man, who can be honest with you? Who can hold you accountable? You know, because he doesn't have a boss. He was like, well, you know, John Schneider, who Pete helped hire. Oh, my two sons, well, those are your kids. Oh, Carl Tater, our former quarterback's coach. Well, you fired Carl. You know, it's just like you're naming people who can't actually be real with you. And if you're Russell, someone who wants to be real with him, it's like, well, where do we go, you know, from here? So it's like it's such a difficult situation over here right now. Like, it really is. I try not to be too doom and gloom and, you know, like, right. be fear-mongering to the fans. But, like, how else can I put it right now? The quarterback and the coach can't coexist. Like, that's a very big issue.
Yeah, very, very big. So how is this playing out in the Pacific Northwest? Because, you know, Pete Carroll has been a constant. Russell Wilson's been a constant. This is almost like a Belichick-Brady thing light.
Yeah, it's very similar. I was just going to use that same analogy. It's very similar. Or I was talking to one of my friends this morning. I was like, it's kind of like Game of Thrones. Like, you're either rolling with the Starks or whatever the other people's name was. I can't.
Lannisters.
That's going to bug
me. Lannisters.
The Lannisters.
Right.
Yes, thank you, guys. Uh-huh. The Stark, you're either rolling with one. You can't roll with both. You know, you yeah. got to pick Pete or you got to pick Russell. And there's kind of like a Seahawks Twitter civil war going on right now for people who are like, Pete's the winningest coach we've ever had. He brought us a Super Bowl. He drafted Russell. He drafted the Legion of Boom. He traded for Marshawn. And then there's the other side. It's like, well, we didn't actually have a winning record with Pete until Russell showed up.
Yeah.
You know, he's the best quarterback in franchise history. He's our most important player. You know, like, it's again, both sides make a lot of points. So, yeah, it basically is a whole war going on. My mentions are on fire. I had to basically turn my Twitter off. But, yeah, it's just a big civil war going on, like Pete versus Russ. And ultimately, it's only going to be one of them here at the end of the day. Is the end of the day this season? Is it next season? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I really don't think you can have both of them here when they both want so much control over what the on-field product looks like.
What does your viewpoint tell you? Who's left standing?
I mean, that's a good question. Because, like I said, Pete doesn't really have a boss. Like, Jody Allen, the sister of the late Paul Allen, officially owns the team, quote unquote, but like, I ain't heard from her. I don't even know what she looks like, to be honest. Like, I ain't heard her voice before. She ain't done no Zooms, no conference calls. She don't tweet, no press releases, nothing. Yeah. So we don't know what she feels. But for me, if you ask me, I would rather have the quarterback. I think it's a lot harder to find a franchise, legit, can be your guy for 20 years quarterback whose ceiling is legit best in the league. Like, that's his ceiling. Even if he's not there right now, that's his ceiling. I can find another coach. Why can I find another Pete Carroll? No, because Pete Carroll's also a Hall of Fame coach. But I can find someone that Russell meshes with better if I'm going to choose Russell. Whereas if I choose Pete, like, again, Pete had two losing seasons before Russell got here. So, like, who, you know, the chicken or the egg type of thing. But I think I'm going to go with the quarterback in his prime over the 70-year-old head coach.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael Sean Duggar. Great article. Really good stuff with us, too. We appreciate your time, man.
Man, thank you guys for having me. Let's have a good one.
You too. Michael Sean Duggar covers the Seahawks for The Athletic. Also does the Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit Coulter Infinity. com. Coming up next, Kyrie Irving wants to see change in the NBA, specifically in a graphic way. And the latest on Deshaun Watson news. We'll get into all of it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata, Song of the Day.
Time is precious, I know.
my money, Bic. One of the best songs of the 80s.
I agree. I'm not a Culture Club fan, but I always love this song.
I feel the same way. I just think it's...
it's great. Yeah, it's fabulous.
It's darn near perfect.
It's really, really good. And sax solo, I'm not a big saxophone guy, but...
yeah, they probably wouldn't do that if this song came out now.
Yeah. But
but with all the talk about time and the passage of time, lyrically, it's wonderful.
Yeah. I agree.
We're just trying to be so deep. That's today's Song of the Day by Culture Club. I don't know if you saw this story. I think this is pretty interesting. Kyrie Irving of the Brooklyn Nets has started a campaign again. He wants to redo the NBA's logo. Doesn't think it should be Jerry West anymore.
Okay.
He wants to do the redo the league's logo and use a silhouette of Kobe Bryant. He wrote on Instagram, "Gotta happen. I don't care what anyone says." Got reaction from Vanessa Bryant, who said, "I love this. I don't know what's going to happen with it." But in researching this story today, I did find some interesting audio from back in 2017 from Jerry West himself, who was on The Jump on ESPN with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as a member of the panel. Listen to what he said about being the NBA's logo.
You know, first of all, I wish that had never gotten out that logo. I do. Really.
Why? It's the best nickname ever, by the way.
And I've said it more than once. And, you know, it's flattering if that's me. And I know it is me.
Yes.
But it is flattering. And but to me, as I say, I played in the time when they first started to try to market the league. There were five people that they were going to consider. And I didn't find out about it until, well, the late commissioner told me about it. Walter Kennedy, and then obviously the New York Times had a big article about it. But again, it's flattering, but it's also, I think, if I were the NBA, I would be embarrassed about it. I really would.
Why?
Because I don't know. I just say I don't like to do anything to call attention to myself. When people say that, that's just not who I am. Period.
Wow.
And if they would want to change it, I wish they would. In many ways, I wish they would.
Yeah, and again, that's 4 years ago almost, in 2017. Well, Kobe Bryant had not passed away at that point. Interesting to hear him say that. I don't want to draw attention to myself. Maybe don't be so good at basketball at the early stages of the league.
In the book I wrote with Jerry Colangelo, I interviewed Jerry West on this very subject, and he was part miffed that nobody would ever admit it was him. So it's not like he became the logo as a tribute to him. It just was designed and it was him, and they never admit it was him, and so that's kind of led to his indifference. And I think Jerry West is also that kind of guy. He doesn't want to be considered the best of all these guys, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, why Kobe? I mean, granted, it'd be a nice tribute to a guy who was taken from us far too early, but why Kobe is the logo? What is the logo?
Do you keep the same style where it's just a silhouette of a player?
I mean, the reason would be because he passed away, because the answer would be Jordan should be the logo.
I mean, how many other great players have passed away over the years?
Or
too?
Does it have to be a player? Should it be a basketball move?
Or just a generic player?
Look, the NFL's logo is a shield with stars and a football.
Mm-hmm.
Major League Baseball, I believe,
Harmon Killebrew, baby.
Is that who it is?
That's who it is.
But I believe they had the silhouette idea first.
Mm-hmm.
I might be speaking out of school on that, too. Do you need to have a player silhouette on a logo?
No. You don't. And I've always, I mean...
baseball has it.
Yeah, we just said that, Jarrett.
Sorry, I was tweeting. I just saw Kyler Murray tweet.
Do you know who the baseball player is?
I do. Harmon Killebrew.
Wow, we just said that too, Jarrett.
What did Kyler Murray tweet out, Jarrett?
He tweeted out, he was retweeting a video of Oklahoma offensive lineman.
Creed Humphrey. Look, they need offensive line help, but if they draft a center at 16, there's going to be some I'm not saying they're not they're right. There'll be some upset Cardinal fans if they draft
the
center.
And I know it's an Oklahoma player, so of course he has a connection. But it is him tweeting again about offensive linemen.
Sean Coogler did a Zoom press conference and made it very, very clear that the center job is wide open. They doesn't sound like they're all that high up on Mason Cole anymore.
Well, he gave him reason not to be.
Oh, man. It was back-to-back false starts.
A rough season.
Yeah.
For a guy who really, as a rookie, when he was pressed into duty, remember when A.Q. Shipley went down?
Mm-hmm.
He looked pretty good. So the logo, at least Kyrie Irving is trying to get it changed. I don't know if they'll see any movement on that.
All right.
The latest on Deshaun Watson from Dan Graziano, ESPN. Per sources, Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson met with new Texans head coach David Culley last Friday. In that meeting, Watson reiterated that he wants to be traded and told Culley he has no intention of playing for the Texans again. No change from Watson's end. He remains dug in. This is the story that's not going to go anywhere.
No.
I was watching Get Up this morning, and they were talking about it, and Diana Rossini, who's very dialed in, she's got a lot of sources around the league, and she just basically poured cold water on the whole thing and said, the Texans are not trading Deshaun Watson. I don't know how long, realistically, they can hold on to that stance.
Mm-hmm.
Her quote was, their belief is that they can make it better. What gives anybody in the Houston Texans ownership hierarchy or front office any confidence that they can make anything better? When's the last time they made anything better?
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, but I think this is kind of one of the steps, and I would probably assume there's going to be another step like that where he's going to have to reiterate, hey, I'm serious. I hate you people. Right? To just go Jerry Stiller on him. A lot of problems with you people.
Did you see this story? Matthew Judon of the Baltimore Ravens going at it with ESPN Ravens reporter Jamison Hensley.
No.
He called him a liar over a report about the offer that was made to Matthew Judon. Judon responded with, hey, Jamison Hensley, where's your lying butt at? I got time today, bro. You have to stop lying. I know you want clicks and likes and want to be the people's camp, but stop lying. That's weak. Hensley said, hey, Matthew, I was told that the Ravens offered you a deal similar to Za'Darius Smith's $16.5 million per season earlier this season, and it was declined. If you have a comment, I would certainly add to that piece. I've always been fair with you. Thanks and welcome back to Twitter. It devolved to the point where Judon put on Instagram, I don't know, I know y'all don't know because I just found out this year, but if you have a month to sign a long-term deal after being franchise tag. If a deal doesn't get done in that time, there's no deal, no talking between the two parties. At Jamison Hensley. So I'm waiting on your ESPN sourced apology or I'm leaking these photos I got with you in the strip club.
Wow.
That's one way to deal with things.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, Vinny. That is one way of dealing with
it. I've never heard that one before.
That's unbelievable.
That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to Alex Young. Thanks to Michael Sean Dugar for joining us. Thanks to you for hanging out with us. We always appreciate it. We'll do it tomorrow at 10 all over again. Burns and Gambo up next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.